What we really talk about when it comes to African spirituality is the toll that it takes on our mental health. The belief system that we have inherited is rife with pervasive trauma, and it leads many people to wanting to avoid anything to do with African spirituality in its entirety. I want to understand the impact of spirituality on our mental health and how it affects the way in which we build our relationship with our beliefs. To get insight from an actual expert on this topic, I went to speak to Vela Maseko. Not only is she an experienced clinical psychologist, she is also a sangoma. And I'm hoping that this conversation will delve deep into the complexities of the relationship of mind and spirit. There seems to be a lot of people struggling with mental health, especially now with the lockdown and all of those things. So I wanted to understand that relationship between spirituality and mental health. But I came to you because you are a clinical psychologist and you are a sangoma and you are a Christian.
I'm not sure.
Are you?
Yeah, but I still go to church. Yeah.
Yes. How do you balance? How did you get to balance that? Like, because I'm assuming that you were, like all of us, you were Christian from the time you were young. Because this was our default.
Yes, yes.
You know.
Yes.
And then becoming a clinical psychologist was a conscious decision that you made. And then becoming a sangoma is you were chosen. You know, how did it come about that, you know, your calling and the fact that you were on this direction of wanting to be a psychologist, which is a science, right? Psychology is a kind of a science. It deals with facts almost, whereas spirituality is totally, not totally, but is almost intangible, you know. It doesn't, well, the Western world doesn't see it as a science, but how did you marry those two?
Marrying them was a process. So you've asked me quite a number of questions.
Yes.
So let me first respond to how I got to become a sangoma and a clinical psychologist.
Okay.
So how I see it, what, from birth I was a sangoma. I was born in Sangoma. And maybe I was called to serve as a Sangoma later on in my life, but I was a Sangoma before I was even conceived. Always been a healer. So when I grew up in a Christian family, in a very religious family, by the way, if you know Inkonzo Gasqabai, the Bantu Church of Christ. So I grew up in the family. We observed the Sabbath. So completely removed from an African way of life. So, but when I look back, I think even as a child, I knew who I was. And I know that when I look at the type of questions that I ask, and stuff that I used to do when I was playing alone, stuff that I knew about the world without being told. And one of those questions that I used to ask, and this was before I even started school, was asking my siblings, what if everything that we're doing is not necessary? What if God does not care whether we observe a certain day of the week? And I said, what if when we die, then we realize all of this didn't matter? So it was one of those deep existential questions that I used to ask. And often adults would say, because this is one of the things that I enjoyed doing, speaking to adults, having conversations with them. And people used to say, hey, this one is a strange child, you know? And some people would respond to the questions that I asked. And again, I know I've always been a sangoma because the dreams that I held later on in life, uma sengitshelwa abantu ukuthi awuyabiza ufanele uthwase manje uma kunje. For me, I thought it was normal. I thought it was normal to always dream about natural spaces, to dream about the four elements and being chased by the wind, for example. I thought it was normal. I knew it was one of the nightmares that I used to have as a child, and dreaming about the clouds or the sky is very close to earth. And also experiences of knowing that I have a connection with the moon. Because I remember one day walking to school early. It was early, it must have been about past 6 in the morning. And it was a full moon. And seeing the moon as if it's very close to me and being scared, you know? But also having a sense of what I'm being guided by the moon. The moon is watching me. And I was going to walk, I was walking a very long distance for a child. And I was going to pass through a forest. And also another experience was the fear of water. And then one day I got lost and I found myself close to a dam and I froze. And I know I knew there was something in there looking at me. And I was scared.
Sure. You know?
And these are things that I didn't share with other people, but I knew this were my experiences as a child. I mean, from school going age, primary school, age 6 to 9, and these experiences are intense. But anyway, society socializes you, and then you're not supposed to think certain things, you're not supposed to ask certain things, you're not supposed, like sending messages to people telepathically was something that I did. And I thought it was fun. Like, I can make them. You know?
Yeah.
And then you are told, this is demonic. You must stop doing that. Then you stop. And then I grew up, then I learned about this psychology. The first time I knew about psychology, when I was growing up in Mabopane, no TV, nothing. And I don't know how I got to learn about, psychology. It was from a piece of paper. And you're reading about psychology, and I think, because I loved reading. I knew I wanted to be this thing. And even meditation, it was again from a piece of magazine or some, an old magazine for that matter. And I said, I know this, I do this thing. Because this is how I thought, for me it was prayer. And I thought, I even told my mom one day, I don't pray like you guys, I don't recite a prayer. I sit down and I talk to God. in my heart. I ask him questions and he answers me.
Because they say prayer and meditation is like listening.
Yeah. And you see, I did not know this was meditation, but I said, this is how I pray. I sit down and I speak to God and I listen, and then he answers me. So it was inborn. Then later on, I grew up and said, oh, okay, this thing is called meditation, but I was doing it, you see. And that is why, and I don't think I was unique in that sense. I think children are born knowing who they are. And through socialization, they are forced to forget who they are. So all of this information gets stored in your subconscious or even the unconscious eventually, because you're repressing it. Yeah. So I think I didn't repress all these things successfully, because then they would imagine my dreams. And sometimes when I'm sitting alone, then I would think about these things and I would imagine myself doing certain things. Like as a child, people used to say I was lazy in the family. And they say, it's when I was a seven, I'm still parts.
And people say, and here you are.
Yeah. What kind of a job is that? I'm doing exactly that. I sit down and I speak. I have conversations with people. That's all I do every day.
Sure. So then you started studying.
Then I go to university. Then I'm drawn to psychology. Then I studied psychology. And then I start to... And I love psychology because it made sense to me in many ways. It explained my view of the world to a certain extent. But the more I studied it, then I realized something was missing. You know? Then I went to vets, I'm doing my clinical psychology. And then my spirit awakened again. So now instead of only reading, absorbing information mentally, everything becomes experiential. I hear with my entire body. So I'll be sitting in class, and if a lecturer mentions something or I'm reading an article and I know it in my bones that this is correct. This is right. And this is how certain theorists in psychology made sense to me. And if something does not resonate with me, I would experience it intensely.
Yeah.
You know? And then that's when I realized that I hear not only with my ears, you know, I hear with other parts of my body, and I see with my eyes closed. Then the deepest question was, what is the mind? Where is the mind? Became my subject of interest. Where is it located? It still is. So, and your other question was how do I balance the three? It's happening on its own. It's evolving on its own. Like when I started, I saw myself, I also had a conflict about Christianity, my religion, how I used to understand God and umuntu, human beings. So, and one of my deepest pains when makuvuka idlozi, that was when I was doing my internship, and I remember weeping almost every day. And my pain came from everything that I knew about God, about myself, I was losing it. I didn't even have, secondly, I didn't have the language to explain my own experiences. I didn't have words to name my own experiences and, or even my visions and say, okay, ngiphuphe nge 1, 2, 3. Oh, I dreamt about. It was always, I saw this thing, I experienced this thing. So language was very limited in explaining my own experiences or just to make sense of my experiences. And thirdly was, what I was going through was so painful, so confusing, and I kept on saying, no woman should go through this. No woman. And simply because a woman has a lot of responsibilities. I'm a mother, I'm a daughter, I'm a sister, I'm a wife. I'm supposed to provide for people, and I couldn't. Because sometimes I would wake up in the morning somewhat paralyzed, couldn't move. And you're looking at your children. They're expecting mommy to drive them to school, and I can't do that.
You can't even articulate why.
I'm an intern, I'm doing research in psychology. I couldn't write a sentence after seeing a patient and write clinical notes, because words sometimes escape me.
Oh, but.
And 1 minute you are sick, the next minute you are fine. What do you say to a doctor? Couldn't seek help, can't tell people, because it doesn't make sense. I get lost in the same area that I've lived in for a good 3 years. I get lost. Drop off kids at school, going back, I don't know how to go back to the flat. Instead of going to Parktown, I find myself in Emerentia.
Yeah.
Emerentia Dam, for that matter. Yeah. So I was just trying to show you how difficult it was. Very confusing. I was confused. But I survived. I survived. I pulled through. Gave birth. Like I was telling you, that I felt I forget those, and the following week I conceived a child. So I'm also pregnant, so I gave birth, and eventually I completed my studies. And the conflict between Christianity and African beliefs, it's a space that I continue to revisit and clarify it for myself. And every time I do that, I find that there's no conflict in the essence of the beliefs or the philosophy. There's no conflict. It's the same thing.
It's interesting when you say that part of the process of you coming to terms with your spiritual path was painful. There's the very disturbing link between African spirituality and trauma. Right. The idea of embracing your ancestors to general people, to us, it sounds traumatic. For people who have a calling, seem very traumatic. Traumatized, rather.
Yeah.
Right. You know, your Tuatha is traumatic. First, I want to understand, how does that trauma impact on how we evaluate our experiences? Because I think a lot of people struggle with that aspect of trauma, and this is why a lot of people try to stay away. Because all we hear is, you know, even if ungayothwasa, there's always this essence, this messaging that, you know, abaphansi bakwatile, you know, they're angry, they're going to punish you. There's, you know, so I'm concerned as to how does that trauma impact how we form a relationship with our beliefs.
Should it be traumatic? I don't think so. Mm. Lately, I've come to a conclusion. By its very nature, is a natural process. And I'm not talking about going to a pehlweni and having all the rituals done and the formal training. Mm. And I'm talking about ukthwasa as a process of spiritual awakening,
mm.
getting to know, coming to knowing yourself
mm.
as you essentially are.
Mm.
What makes it traumatic is the lies that we are told growing up.
Mm.
It's the fear that is instilled in us. A fear of yourself.
Mm.
You know, a fear of yourself as an African. Let me just put it that way. Because mm-hmm. the irreligion itself tells you what your people's way of life is demonic. And if you do these things, you're going to go to hell.
Mm.
Right? So there's also a fear of punishment. So when you come face to face with your ancestors, it's like, what did I do? Did I cross a line that I was not supposed to cross?
Mm.
So I'm now in hell? Mm. Is that why I'm meeting these people?
Mm.
You know?
Mm.
So there's a deep fear of ourselves and deep hatred for who we are, and I experienced that hatred and the pain. Why it was difficult for me is because I was struggling to accept myself for who you are. I'm dreaming of myself, I'm like, I cannot be Sangoma. It cannot be. Even when I was hearing drums, mm. And this is an experience I had near with in another space here. They call it what? Personal transformation. It was a workshop. And then Wakobugilos. And I heard drums and I heard music. I heard people singing, clapping hands
mm.
when I was in a trance. And my reaction was of fear. What is happening to me? What did I do that made me come into contact with these beings? My ancestors, for that matter, and I'm saying these beings who are practicing demonic stuff,
mm.
you know? So there's guilt, there's fear, there's self-blame. That's what makes this journey painful. So you resist, right? You're mm-hmm. resisting.
So then, from what you're saying, the trauma is not a result of what is happening
to you as a person. Yeah,
it is a result of your internal conflict in interpreting what is happening mm-hmm.
because in other religions people seek this, people seek what comes to us naturally.
Mm.
People go, you know, they meditate, they do all sorts of things to open their subconscious.
Mm.
And it comes to us naturally. For us, it's a normal way of development.
Mm.
At some point in your life, something opens up.
Mm.
Without you doing anything, it comes to you.
Mm. Because also what I've realized happens a lot is that by the time a person turns to African beliefs or African spirituality, they are at their lowest.
Yeah.
It is the absolute last resort.
Mm.
And they come with, like, we come with this deep desperation.
Yeah.
And what I've also noticed is that it's not a desperation for a new way of life. It is a desperation to escape something.
Yes.
I'm trying to get out of the situation.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I want to live according to how God mm. intended. I'm saying there's this particular situation that I want to get out of.
And we spend our lives running from ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is how I can sum up my life. I spent many years running from myself. And I got to a point where I could not run anymore. because it felt like I was losing my mind.
Mm. So you're not running from your calling, you're running from yourself.
You're running from yourself. You're running from yourself. You are a healer. You are born a healer.
Mm.
You're not running from amadlozi who are located out there, who are out to get you, who have decided at some point that they want to give you gifts.
Mm.
You know?
Mm.
Or who have chosen you so that they can mess up your life because you are a high flyer and you have forgotten about them. That is my analysis, at least.
Mm.
And I know I differ with other people. Yeah.
Mm.
My experience of amadlozi were not only amadlozi who are located somewhere outside of me. They are in me.
Mm.
Their knowledge is in me. Their knowledge is here in me. Their experiences are my experiences.
Mm.
I remember what they did as if I was there in that lifetime.
Mm.
I am them. They are me.
Mm. But what about people who are not called to be healers? Because I think even those who basically want to live a peaceful life, want to turn to African spirituality, but now, but they're not sure how to navigate it, because I think I'm worried that a lot of the time when we speak of African spirituality, we almost automatically seem to be talking about
Isango.
Isango.
I'm not talking about Isango.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about Isango. I'm saying, remember I said I don't think I'm unique?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's in all of us. It's just that when you discover who you are, right? You will discover the path is one, the same path.
Mm.
So when I walked that path, when my soul opened up, I discovered then that I was a healer.
Mm.
But you might discover certain things about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You will discover your talents. You will discover your purpose for coming here on earth.
Mm. Mm. And another thing that seemed to occur, like a reoccurring theme with African spirituality, is the idea of generational trauma.
Yes. Yeah.
Is there an equivalent of that from a psychological perspective? Is there such a thing as generational trauma?
Yeah, there is.
Mm.
There is. And it's explained in different ways,
mm.
right? But the bottom line is that you are inheriting trauma, whether genetically, you know, in other schools of thought, like the Jungian psychology will speak about the collective unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
So what your ancestors went through, you will tap into it at some point,
mm-hmm.
right? So there is a generational trauma. And if you think about the chaos that has happened here in Africa,
mm-hmm.
the wars, oppression, how people were brutally killed, everything that our forefathers went through,
mm-hmm.
we carry it in our bodies. In the same way that I was saying, what my ancestors' experiences are my experiences, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
And they will come to me through dreams or visions,
mm-hmm.
sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes you get to you just have a sense of knowing something. You know that, right?
Mm.
You go to a place, you know for sure you've been here before.
Mm. It happened to me when I went to, because I grew up here in Joburg. The first time I went to the Eastern Cape, I remember there was a place I went to and there was a mountain that had mist on it.
Mm.
And there was this small house standing by itself,
mm-hmm.
you know, and something felt deeply familiar.
It
felt deeply familiar, and every time I see images of those Eastern Cape mountains in the mist, I literally feel it somewhere in my chest every time I see those images. There's a calm that comes over me, and sometimes I use those images as part of my meditation. Because it's something that I cannot explain, and it has to be that particular place. It can't be those mountains somewhere in America or whatever. It has to be in that particular place. So now, keeping within this idea of a generational trauma, where do you think we are as a generation? Like, is there something that we are going through collectively as a generation?
There is something that we are going through collectively. And it answers the question, why are so many people being called today? So we're going through this collectively. And for me, it then disputes the idea of only special people are called. Yes, if you are a healer, you will be called to become a healer, right? By the way, there's many types of healers. Even musicians are healers. Artists are healers. So we are all awakening to ourselves. We are all awakening to the God within us.
Sure.
For centuries, maybe one or two centuries, Africans started buying into the idea of God who is in heaven, right? And that idea does not sit well with our children, even those who are not exposed to African spirituality. There's a resistance to it. There's a sense of knowing it can't be true. You know? So yes, we're going through that. And with the issue of generational trauma, we are people in pain collectively. We are in so much pain. Sometimes I joke about it, and I tell black people are funny. When we cry differently, eh? Have you ever noticed? Shais baby twan. We go. You know, we cry. The pain is good. Lay is deep. But if you ask a person, most of the time they don't know where it comes from. So we're carrying this deep seated pain. And sometimes it comes out when you least expect it. And you find yourself weeping. You're weeping for what? You don't know. At funerals, we cry painfully, man. As black people.
I remember the first time I encountered a person on Amahlozi. It was actually a friend of mine, around 2012, 2013. And at that time, I didn't know what a trance is. I didn't know. I've heard of Amahlozi. Right? I didn't know how they actually work. And so a friend of mine went into trance. And the one thing that always stuck with me, the memory that stuck with me of that moment, was the cry.
The wailing.
I remember telling her afterwards, I'm like, it sounded like 100 people were crying for 1,000 years. It was like the most profound crying. It's like, a human being can't cry like that. What are you crying? And at that time, I'm sure she was, mid-20s or so, you know. And like, you can't cry like that.
Yeah.
There's nothing in this world that you have gone through that would make a person cry like that. Because even the sound, I remember how the room vibrated with her cry. It wasn't even a loud cry. It was this deep mourning.
Yeah.
Like a deep, deep loss that she had gone through. And how I knew that this was into Zawantaba Dala was it? When she came out of it, she was like, hey, how are you? How have you been? I'm like, no. No.
Who was that?
No, you can't. I'm like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
You can't do that. Yeah. Like, she literally got up and she was sweating. She wiped herself. I was like, hey, how are you? I haven't seen you in a long time. How are you? I'm like, what just happened? She's like, I don't remember. What did you see? And I'm like, no, what do you mean you don't remember? You were here. Like, when I come out, I don't remember part of it.
Yes, yeah.
You know? And that's when I realized that for me, where potentially some of this trauma is, but also there's something that I'm not sure if I'm imagining or not, but it seems to affect women differently.
Mm.
I don't know why, because also there's a lot more women being called than men. And I'm not sure if it's a historical aspect of it has always been women, or if the generations of women that have come before are trying to recall themselves.
Yeah. You could be right.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe all the statements that, in fact, I think all of them are correct.
Mm-hmm.
But also, Mina, I wonder if men are suppressing what women are freely allowing themselves to experience and express.
Mm-hmm.
What do they do with this pain? Do they express it through violence?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So then what you're saying is quite intense, because what it could possibly mean is that the reason for the rising in gender-based violence could very much intrinsically be linked to our spirituality as men, and the extent to which we are suppressing it.
Yes.
And now it's iyabola.
Yes.
It's rotting.
Mm.
And it's turning into something else.
It is turning into something else. Because pain has a tendency to do that. You can internalize it or externalize it.
Mm.
If you internalize it, it will lead to self-destruction, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it is not acknowledged and processed and dealt with properly. If you externalize it, then you attack other people. You place your fears, your pain in others, and then you attack the other.
When I had this conversation, a similar conversation with Ukoko Obri, I asked him this question as to why is it that both black men and women went through trauma, yet black women have handled it differently.
Yes.
And black men have handled it differently.
Yeah.
What? Because, you know, I can say as a man or a descendant of men and say that, you know, my forefathers went through apartheid, they went through this, they went through that, but my grandmothers also went through it.
They did. Yeah. You know,
my great-grandmothers went through the same thing. Yet they held up our community despite what it is that they were going through. So is it an inherently spiritual thing that women handled it better, or is it a physiological thing that women... I don't even want to say they handled it better, but they handled it.
But if you think about the fact that, or consider the fact that in all of us, there's the feminine and the masculine energy in all of us. So what is there in men is there in women. But through socialization, people who have female bodies, let me just call it that way, yeah, right? Because we're not our bodies. Where we're assigned certain roles, and we're told, you will not go MPN. Only males will go MPN. You see? So we were socialized, we were groomed in a particular way. So those who were sent out to fight learned to channel their pain and anger that way.
Through violence.
And if I'm told that it is wrong for me to fight, to get into fight as a woman, it's not right, right? Mm-hmm. I am forced to find other ways to deal with my pain and anger. I'm forced to because I'm told you cannot fight. Mm. You should not.
Mm.
Right? I'm sure then women over the years nurtured that part of themselves. Because for me, it seems like in society, over the evolution of men, we sort of disconnected from ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
When I came face to face with my own masculinity, I thought something was wrong with me.
Mm.
You know? I thought it's something that needed to be corrected. But luckily, when that happened to me, I was already a student in psychology, so I parked it, I observed it, and I worked through it. Until my masculinity and my femininity were aligned.
This is a strange question. Do you think that this generation of women are embracing their masculinity subconsciously more?
Yes.
And this is why there's, I suppose, a feminist movement and women sort of, as they say, embracing your strengths.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And men too. Some men too are there. But remember, we're not at the same level of evolving spiritually. Some are aware of it, some are not aware of it. And this is not something that I've read or thought clearly through, but it's just a thought that comes to my mind sometimes. Mm-hmm. What could it then lead to when you start experiencing your femininity as a man? Could it lead to a conflict or a crisis about your sexuality? I wonder about it.
It's actually an interesting question to ask. What does a man who embraces both his aspects look like?
Yes. Yes.
What does he do?
Yes.
How does he view himself?
And a woman, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But let's just say, how does a person who embraces both energies look like? How does she or he choose to express himself or herself in the world?
Mm. Because then it also throws out the idea of gender roles.
It does.
Or does it? Like,
gender roles are man-made, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm literally imagining it now, you know. Mm. Like, how would a family even of a man and a woman who are balanced in their energies?
Yes.
Even, you know, because there's no, you know, I'm the man of the house.
No.
Or it could be I'm the man of the house. It doesn't mean that there's a hierarchy.
I'm superior.
What? Yeah, I am the man in the house.
In the
not
house,
the man
yes.
of
yeah.
the house.
Yeah, I am the man in the house and I can choose to play certain roles depending on my abilities, maybe. Not simply because I have male genitals.
Mm.
Yeah.
Sure. And as you were saying, I think they will come across or come up the question of sexual orientation.
Yes.
Where I suppose a man then won't understand what does it mean to embrace your feminine. Because if thinking that if I say I'm embracing my feminine, it means that I want to be a woman. Or
yeah. And that's why I call it a crisis. So kuzoba ne sexual identity crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And how that person will resolve that, it's, yeah.
Because
it will
always
be different.
I'm sensing that the way in which these cases of gender-based violence come across, when you really think about it, it's not crime, you know, because I was talking to a friend of mine and we were talking about the difference between gender-based violence and normal violence. And because we were talking about how men, the number of men who get killed is much higher than the number of women who get killed. But I was like, the reason for it is the biggest factor.
Yeah.
You know, if I walk down the street and I get mugged, it's because the person wanted something from me. You know what I mean? Mm. But with women, there's this desire to destroy.
By the way, that also happens to women. Sometimes a person attacks a woman simply to take possessions and whatever, and then they leave you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because with us, I fear walking down the street.
Mm.
I fear hijack. I don't fear anything at home.
Mm.
You know? Whereas with women, their danger is more pervasive. But also these crimes of, you know, the mutilations, the birth, the little children. It's like, it's not normal. And I know that, you know, sometimes they say it's patriarchy and whatever. I come from the school of patriarchy. Mm. They don't teach us that.
No.
You know what I mean? This is something much more deeper a person is trying to assert. It's like the man is trying to assert himself in a very profoundly disturbing way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you're almost trying to go past the woman's body. You're trying to get mm-hmm. right to her soul
mm-hmm.
in the thing that mm-hmm. you're trying to do.
Wow.
And so I'm thinking that it could be that we as men are going through something collectively, as much as we as a generation are going, as Black people.
Yes.
You know, I'm thinking, as I'm saying this, I'm thinking that we as men are going through something. We are feeling challenged.
Mm.
In what way?
Oh, okay. No, we're still fine.
All right. In that it feels that we need to keep reasserting our masculinity, because somehow we feel like it's fading.
Yeah, maybe at a subconscious level.
Mm-hmm.
That is what other people are dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if others are consciously aware mm-hmm. of the crisis that they're going through
mm-hmm.
as men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then if it's in the subconscious only, then it's more dangerous, eh? Because the possibility to unpack it and deal with it and resolve it is very limited.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it brings me back to one of the original questions that I asked, in that when a person is going through or is in a spiritual journey, is it possible for them to differentiate that this is a mental issue that I need to challenge, or a past trauma that I need to engage with, or this is a calling, this is part of my calling, you know?
You know what? The symptoms are so similar. You know, the symptoms of someone who has a lot of mental conditions. The symptoms, again, if you compare them with the symptoms of umuntu ovukwayidlozi, the symptoms are so similar. So for DSM-5, which is the diagnostic tool, the psychiatry, it's easier to use it, because then you can eliminate what this is not schizophrenia, because this person is presenting with 1, 2, 3, but doesn't have 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the common symptoms are depressive symptoms and anxiety symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And it's depression that you experience when your spirit or your soul awakens. The depression there is so deep. It's very deep and it's painful. But you see, the main difference, symptoms that a person or tosai experiences, what makes them different from a psychiatric condition is that those symptoms are very transient.
Mm-hmm.
A person can be severely depressed today, but wake up tomorrow feeling okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
A person can become just once. A person might look like they've lost their mind completely. They're saying things, you know, they're not making sense. You know, they're making the sentences are not complete. So you're looking crazy, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it never happens again. So you can never say this person is schizophrenic because it only happened once in their lives. And it only lasted 5 minutes or even less, you know. So the symptoms are so similar, but there are ways of differentiating utasa from psychiatric conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And also the dream content, the content of visions. You can see, you can tell if someone is seeing stuff that is buried in the subconscious or the unconscious.
And
something that does not emanate just from fears, for example. I mean we are in constant fear for our lives on a daily basis, for example, and hallucinations for someone who is mentally disturbed. My hallucinations would be about what is happening now.
Mm.
Yeah.
It actually brings an interesting point in that we live in the world of social media, right? We spend hours and hours and hours, right? And from my understanding, from the little that I know about psychology, is that the things we engage with on a daily sort of get imprinted in our mind. So, and in terms of specifically for in African spirituality, in that we are exposed to so much more content about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to figure out to what extent does that sort of manifest in our subconscious. In that we are dreaming about people we see online. We're dreaming about people we saw on TV, you know. And I think, and a lot of people are then confused. They get confused, like, and then they would say, you know, I had this dream about you. I had this dream about that person. And they can't differentiate that. Am I dreaming about this because I had an interest in it? Or I've been thinking about it. Or am I dreaming about it because there's something deeper happening?
Yes, yeah. No, it's a factor. And I appreciate the fact that we're speaking about African spirituality in social media, on TV, and even this podcast. However, I'm also aware of the fact that then people who have not yet, and I keep using the word, your soul opens up, like who have not developed spiritually to a certain point where their subconscious opens up, where they can tap into the collective unconscious, if I can use the word, the land of amadlozi, because this is where the collective unconscious is, who are not already there. They will know about these things, and because they will, and then they will think this is their own experience. Because they will start dreaming about them because they've heard me talk about it, right? So there's that as well. And I know we tend to criticize our forefathers for keeping a lot of things secret. Even when Nathi Masiye Pehlweni, Tina Masithwasiswa, we were told, but you don't talk about these things. Nabantu bangathwasanga. Right? And we are criticizing that and say, but how are people going to know about our own spirituality? But I'm also beginning to appreciate the fact that that was done so that when you start experiencing it, you know it is your own experience.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't read about it somewhere. You didn't hear about it somewhere. It's your genuine experience.
Mm.
And for me, this is what helped me for sure. This is what made me know for sure that I am not crazy. I know that my experiences are authentic.
Mm.
I kept saying, how do I know the things that I know? Because I've never experienced them in this lifetime.
Mm.
I've never seen them anywhere. I've never heard anyone speak about these things, but I've dreamt about them. I've seen them in my visions. How do I know that?
Mm.
And then the answer would be, okay, therefore, I have access to my forefathers' experiences.
Mm.
Exactly like your experience when you went to the Eastern Cape.
Mm.
You knew you've been there before,
mm.
even though in this lifetime you had not been there.
Mm.
So, you experiences from your forefathers were transferred to you.
Mm.
How? It's another question mm. for another day.
Yeah.
But their experiences, you can tap into their own, mm. into their experiences.
So then that means we as this digital, people consuming digital media so much, have to be more discerning in our experiences.
Mm.
In our dreams, we have to question more.
Yeah, I often say, like, dreaming about a lion, amanzi, what, that does not make you isangoma.
Mm.
It's normal.
Mm.
It's normal because in African philosophy we are interconnected. Dreaming about those things that not necessarily mean you have to go your twasa.
Mm.
There's more that you need to experience that will prove to you what you are being called now.
Mm. Oh, okay. That's it.
Mm.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Nyambonga.
When I started this podcast, it was to bring into being a promise that I had made to myself in my approach to spirituality, which is to never follow anything or anyone blindly. To interrogate whatever information that I am given. I also am promised to interrogate myself as well. To interrogate my experiences, my perceptions, and also my understanding of things. This conversation with Ugogo Vela is one of those that I had always hoped to have, but I needed a certain foundation first before I could have them. One of the things that has stuck with me in this conversation and in personal conversations that I've had with other people is that in many of us, there is something that is pushing us in our spiritual path. There is something that we are trying to resolve, something that we are trying to alleviate, or something that we are trying to come to terms with. There is one particular thing that we carry that we are trying to remedy in some way, be it an incident or be it a situation, but it is a memory of some kind that we carry deep down inside us, and maybe even subconsciously so, that we are struggling with. I believe that it is from this particular thing that many of the complexities of our perception of our lives come from, outside of the ancestral obligations of African spirituality. For some of us, it is something that we have built not only our views of life, but we have built our identities around this thing. Or it is something that we use to understand and evaluate our experiences, a kind of filter. So now what we do is that we say to someone or a healer that, I had this dream about water, or I had a dream about an old woman giving me beads, or I had a dream about an old man giving me a white cloth. And we hope that in resolving this particular dream, we will indirectly resolve this thing that we can't even bring ourselves to put into words. I mean, it is easier to say that I had a dream that I was underwater than to say I am hurt. To say that I am angry. To say that I am ashamed. And to be specific in saying that I am hurt by this particular situation, or I am angry about this particular incident, or I'm ashamed about this particular issue. Our desire is that if I say that I'm embracing my ancestors or I'm embracing African spirituality, then it must come with some kind of resolution to this particular thing that I'm carrying inside me. Then when things do not get resolved in the way we expect it to, or in the time frame that we expected, then we just say these things don't work. This, I believe, is when we then interpret what happens during our spiritual journey as trauma. I am not in any way saying that trauma does not exist or horrible things do not happen to people. What I am saying is that there is another dimension to how we perceive certain things. I believe that once you confront this particular thing that you carry, once you engage it openly and honestly, then your dreams become that much clearer. Your path is filled with less confusion. Your ancestors' communication becomes that much clearer too, because you are not looking through things through a filter of whatever is being communicated to me better be a quick solution to this thing that I have, otherwise I am not hearing anything. I hope that in whatever way that you can sit with your particular thing, your particular suitcase, as it were, and to open it and unpack it. I'm hoping that you will find someone who will help you to do that. Who knows? You might find that you have been carrying the answers that you have been looking for all along. My name is Vusumzi Nqandi. Thank you so much for joining me on episode 10 of The Journey Kwantu. I hope that you have learned something, and I hope that it has helped you in some way. I wish you light, I wish you courage, and I wish you all the best on your journey. Makwande.